Welcome to another episode of Autosave. I'm Camille Salazar Hadaway here with my co-host, Mr. Nick Andrade. I don't know why I said it like you were like doing a walkout at a wrestling match. He is kind of doing a walkout dance, but it's really bad to the eyes, so you should be lucky you're not seeing it. Today is the final episode. Today is the final episode of our journey through Guardians of the Galaxy, the video game. And today, the last question of the day, Nick, I'm going to just get straight to a hard-hitting question. We've been silly with our questions before, but this one's real serious, okay?
All right. Okay.
5v5 cage match. Video game Guardians versus MCU Guardians.
Ooh.
Who wins?
So let's go through this character by character. Okay. Quill versus Quill. Mm-hmm. Let's start with that, okay? I'll try to be quick so you can have your answers, but Quill versus Quill goes to Game Quill because everyone hates Chris Pratt. So everyone wants to see his ass get beat. All right, so.
All right.
I know the laugh is real when you're when you got like the old dad like wheeze going. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so Quill, video game Quill automatically beats Chris Pratt Quill, okay?
Yes.
Gamora versus Gamora, really tough. I think that movie Gamora has her shit together more than video game Gamora. I think video game Gamora has like a lot of baggage that's relatively new baggage.
Okay. So who do you think takes it between the two of them?
I'm going to give it to Zoe Saldana.
Ah, see, I was going to say video game.
Okay.
Gamora, because she's been through some ish. She actually had to kill her sister, Nebula. She would go through anything because she's been there,
okay. Done
that. So that's my answer for that one.
Okay, that's true. All right, that's good. So I'm guessing, because you didn't chime in on Quill versus Quill, you agree with my Quill statement.
Yes, okay, I do. Good.
All right, yeah, cool. Okay, so then let's go with Drax. Movie Drax versus video game Drax.
They're the same person.
Exactly.
They're the same person. We just doing rock, paper, scissors for this one? Like, it doesn't matter.
I think so. Because they did such a really good job on the video game Drax that he is almost identical to Dave Bautista's Drax. I would agree. Let's do rock, paper, scissors right now. I'll be video game Drax and you be...
I'm Dave Bautista. Okay, all right, let's go.
And we're going to do rock, paper, scissors or rock, paper, scissors, shoot?
No, rock, paper, scissors. No, there's no shoot, okay? Shoot.
I agree.
Shoot's for losers, okay?
I agree with you.
They just want
you.
Another chance. Okay,
I agree with you, okay? But I'm just... Some people do it. Okay, ready?
All right.
Rock, paper, scissors. Oh, we both did scissors, okay?
Rock, paper, scissors.
All right, I win.
Okay, video game.
I did paper.
Okay,
you did
fine.
Rock.
Video game Drax. So we did that very Drax. Well for
did,
being
yes.
a audio rock, paper, yes, scissors. The first audio rock, paper, scissors in history of podcasts, people.
Podcasts, I think, in the history of the world, to be honest.
Okay, yeah.
So that, we might get a Guinness Book of World Records. Okay, Rocket versus Rocket.
Mm, this is tough.
Yeah.
They're pretty much the same, too.
They are?
Like, they are very similar.
Okay, I think that video game Rocket is a little bit more temperamental than movie Rocket. Also, movie Rocket survived the blip or the whatever it's called, where half
oh,
of the
that's
universe,
true.
Yes.
But that's just by chance. So Luck's on MCU Rocket's side?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. I think so.
I'm going to go with video game Rocket for this one just because his mega ability is just so badass for anyone to make a gun like that. Like, that's crazy. So that's who's taking it for me.
Okay. I'm going to give a point to Bradley Cooper because he's such a handsome man.
Okay.
And he created the song Shallow with Lady Gaga.
Shallow. Yeah.
In the shallow now.
That's all we could sing. We can't sing any more of it.
So that's why he gets the point. And then we'll go with regular Groot versus Groot in the video game because baby Groot is too cute. Teenage Groot is too angsty.
They're underage. They can't go into a cage match. They need to sign their life away. We can't do baby Groot or the teenage Groot. They're underage. They have to sign their life away. They have to at least be 18 or 19 if you're in Canada.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll give it to video game Groot. Because I think he saved a lot of people's asses in this game. What's your opinion?
I'm going to go with movie Groot because he made the ultimate sacrifice for his friends. And he'd be willing to do the same.
And also, he's voiced by Vin Diesel. So that just adds so much more, right?
And family. Yeah.
And it's all about family, right? Okay. So I think we're pretty, I think we got a good mix of bagged.
Yeah. We're pretty much aligned. Let us know who you think would take it in the Discord. You know, we ask the hard-hitting questions here, and we want to hear your hard-hitting answers. On last week's episode, we actually went through a really action-packed chapter.
Rejoice! You made it just in time for the miracle.
Grand Unifier, I trust you can hold them to bear witness.
Easily.
To start off, we found our way into the sacrosanct after Lady Hellbender's army attacked the church and created a distraction for us to slip right through. We battled through some enemies, though, and also got help from our best boyfriend. Well, okay, that sounds wrong now that I said it like that. I meant best boy, who's also our friend, Cosmo, not best boyfriend, because that wouldn't be right. And we rescued Adam Warlock before seemingly being too late to save Nikki, which is where we left off and you heard in that clip. Now it's time for the finale, guys. It's going to get emotional. We may cry because it's coming to the end. And we're going to cover chapter 15, Broken Promises, and chapter 16, Magus. Now we're also going to talk about, I know Nick's crying.
It's the end.
It's the final countdown. Now the discussion here, will the end actually live up to the hype? And I'm not just talking about the hype of, you know, Guardians as a video game and, yep, you know, movies being made into video games and if that works, but I'm talking about whether it will live up to MCU standards, all right?
Ooh, so is that okay?
That's what I'm thinking. You know, okay, if you're going to take a franchise from an iconic point in pop culture,
yeah,
it has to live up to all the references. So we're putting a high standard here, and we're going to discuss it. We're going to talk about it. But first, we got to mention that we are on patreon.com/autosavepod. I was trying to do the jazz thing there. Nick's dying.
Oh my God. Love it. All right, continue. Continue.
Yes. You can get a lot of cool behind the thoughts of all of our thoughts here on the episodes. And we also give a little bit more of a glimpse on our final ratings of games that we cover. So you want to hear the final rating for our Guardians of the Galaxy saga, you got to go on the Patreon and hear it. And we also do our monthly news recaps there as well. So if you can support the show, we'd really appreciate that. After the break, we're going to dive into the final. All right, and just like that, it seems like there's a glitch in the matrix because we're getting a case of a deja vu. We are back in where Corel and Nikki was in their quarters for Corel's birthday. Of course, this is Nikki's promise, and it is weird to kind of kick off this finale in a previous way we've already experienced.
I get it, but it also makes me confused with the promise. Does that mean like these people are replaying the same memory over and over and over and over again?
I feel like it is. It's kind of like a case of Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Just because I at first thought the promise was the initial thing you experience before you commit yourself to the church and like to that belief, right? And then you're kind of like brain dead in a sense or corrupted. Because everyone else that, you know, you see their life energy leaving them, it just kind of seems like they're zombies. But I guess maybe they're just reliving their promise over and over again. I'm not too sure. Well, hopefully the rest of the chapter will kind of give us some insight into that. We also seem to hear Corell's voice almost guiding Peter to her. So similar to how in the previous Nikki's Promise, we opened the door and saw Corell, and it was actually Corell talking to us. Yeah, and she that was an interesting sound effect. She like ghostbustered her way, like,
yeah, she
kind of like threw her soul at us,
yeah,
and
yeah.
said like, this isn't real kind of thing. It was kind of that voice of Corell, so not like a Corell living in the promise, a one that is well aware of what's happening again. Pretty much what Corell says is that we have to tell her it's a dream and we need to help her snap out of it. So pretty much what we have to do, according to Corell's voice and like just the vibes of what we know from the previous like promises we've broken. So Cosmo promised, Peter's his own promise, Drax's promise. We know we have to break the illusion of this being real. So you kind of go around the room as you did before and you see the present, you see the projector, and you have to kind of get Nikki to snap out of it. So you hear Peter saying, Nikki, this isn't real, like snap out of it, and Nikki kind of brushes it all off.
Yeah,
but then you hear a knocking at the door again.
I heard your voice. No, you brought me here. I'm seeing you here now.
You're seeing a ghost. Some part of me is inside the Soul Stone, but not in any way that's real.
We can figure it out. Maybe we can find a way.
You need to focus on her now. Help her accept that I'm not coming back.
I wish you would have told me.
Told you what?
About Nikki. You know? You, me, 12 years ago?
Oh, Peter.
I did the math.
Her promise isn't real.
Yeah, I know, but the rest of it is. Right? You and me on Mercury? I remember that night.
So do I. But she isn't your daughter. She's not my daughter.
I don't understand.
She's a war orphan. On the shuttle home, the Kree Council was rounding up anyone who wasn't full-blooded enough. Nikki was this tiny little thing. I couldn't let them kill her.
So I'm not a father.
And there we have it. We thought the truth was in the math, but no, the truth was with Corell. Quill is not Nikki's dad. This completely shocked me. I was like dumbfounded when I found out. I'm like, no, you must be kidding me. You must be kidding me. All the evidence pointed to Quill.
It was trying to make a false sense of security in what we thought the story would be. This adds a whole new layer. However, I think it's very important. I mean, this whole cutscene, it's not only for Nikki to kind of come to the acceptance that Corell is gone, it's Quill's as well. I don't think he fully understood what was going on, and he came to terms with Corell's death. As much as we see Quill as this fun-loving guy, there's something in there that couldn't get him to kind of understand everything that was going on. And it was Corell who had to kind of just shake him and say, this is what's going on. And despite Nikki not being his child, she still needs you, Peter. You still need to be there for her. And that's something he needed someone to say to him, I think. He needed that reassurance.
So when we first met Corell, we knew that Corell was important to Peter, just because of how he acted, and he gave her the Wookiee, you know, Chewie, his toy. I would think he doesn't have much of from Earth because he left Earth, right, when he was younger, so you can only take a certain amount of things. So that just shows like a special bond that those two have. And when Corell died the first time we experienced this promise. And even after that, when Quill is kind of going through his own promises, I assumed as the player that he knew Corell was dead. And he's even said, like, Corell's dead, like, she's not coming back. But you're right. Yeah. Like, this is a very special moment because it just shows, like, even though he's saying that, a side of him hoped that she wasn't. A side of him really wanted Corell to be alive and maybe even still believed there would be a possibility that Corell would be back. This was touching because also we're seeing Peter tear up, yeah, and it that doesn't happen often. So I actually started tearing up at this part. And then his other world is being destroyed, of kind of moving into this figure of being a father.
Yeah.
And then to have that taken away from him.
I think it also comes to show that maybe he was afraid to do this on his own. Mm-hmm. He's relying on Corell in a certain way, right? Like, we need to do this. We have to stop her, whatever. And she keeps just saying, no, you have to do it, Peter. It's on you. And I think he came to accept his mom's death earlier in this game, right? Something that maybe he's been holding on to for a long time. Now it's time for him to accept, yeah, more than that. And this time accept responsibility for things, regardless of if this problem is his fault, which I don't think it is. But overall, he needs to figure this out himself and do it himself, or else the galaxy is in peril.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So once you come to the realization that you're all on your own, you have to get Nikki's attention from this fake reality and make her realize that none of it's real by pretty much smashing everything that she's trying to prepare for Corell's birthday in this promise.
I need her back. I don't care if it's not real. I need things to go back to how they were, even if it means making the same stupid game for all stupid eternity. Just the thought that she might come back is better than admitting that she never will. And then it's all my fault.
There's a lot of blame to go around, but there is no way you deserve any of it. You can reject the lie, Nick. All I can tell you is me. I don't think it's her. I think it's a very bad thing that wants to eat the entire galaxy. And you know, your mom, for all her faults, is not the galaxy eating type. It doesn't matter what I think, because it's not my promise. I can't destroy it for you.
So let's just say that the creepy thing at the door is not my mom.
I can do that.
I still don't know how. How does anyone? Am I just supposed to smash cakes all day?
Breaking stuff is pretty cathartic. There's other ways.
Oh, all right. So this is so sad. Nikki feels incredibly guilty that she's the reason Corell is dead. Quill puts his faith into Nikki to do the right thing and comes to term with the death, with death as a whole. It's the biggest theme here. Yeah. And then Quill, like, shares this really touching moment where he, for me, this is him really stepping in as a father figure for Nikki, yeah, where, yeah, he shares this memory of his mom teaching him that when someone is gone, or, you know, when you want to remember someone or pay tribute, you light something. So they light the candle from the birthday cake together. And Nikki kind of holds it, remembering her mother, and it helps her remember who her mother is and pulls her out of this promise. Yeah. And even though, like, obviously something like that doesn't bring someone back, it's just a gesture to remind yourself that you have someone special. It's so touching. Like, this moment was just so touching.
I think, one, it's important that Quill was that father figure for her, because she's been through a lot in terms of, she lost her parents, she's an orphan, and now she lost the only person who loved her in her life. Mm-hmm. So this is why she's holding on so hard to the promise. But also what I really enjoy with Quill is he's not trying to force her to make a decision. He has come to the point of acceptance, and his stance, or at least the stance that I chose for him, was you need to decide what's best. I can guide you for a certain point. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, yes, that whoever's knocking on that door is not here to help you. It's not Corell.
Yes.
I can only say what I think, but at the end of the day, you're going to have to make that decision for yourself. And by doing that, it gives, you know, I feel like it's almost like a parenting note in terms of just like letting your child take responsibility for this. It alleviates the pressure of what they want to decide, because I think Quill at this point is like, only you can make the decision. Whatever happens to this universe happens, but you need to decide what you think is best. And I think he trusts Nikki enough to make the right decision. But it's just, holy crap, so many heavy themes in this. Like every time I listen to this, I get like a welled up thing in my throat where I'm just like, god damn, it's such, this and Miles Morales like have dealt with such heavy themes of death, regret, coming to accept things, grieving. Just so many things, like I don't even know how to compute all of that in terms of like talking about it and explaining it, because these are just such heavy things that, you know, mostly everybody has to deal with at some point in their lives.
Yeah, the lead up to this point too, with Quill coming to that realization that Corell is gone, like really gone. Yeah. I was already crying there, and then going into this, I'm like, just, I had the tissue box just like sucking up all the tears from my eyes. It was really touching, because it's very relatable to anyone that's dealing with a loss in their life. And this actually does confirm that for Nikki, she's fully aware that this is fake. She is reliving this promise over and over again. She confirms that, reliving this stupid day, I think she says something along those terms, over and over again, even if she has to do that, she's willing to do that and make that sacrifice to stay in this loop just so she could see her mother walk through those doors. So I guess that's what everyone has experienced once they go into a promise. Now, once this moment happens, another shocking thing happens, because Nikki, a new woman, completely changes. She has fireball red hair and golden eyes. And I don't know how this is possible. Nick, did you see this coming? Because I know I didn't.
So I have no idea who Nikki is at all in terms of apparently, like, she's in the Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, she is a character. Yes. She's been in the comics, all that. I had no idea. So when she broke out of the promise, and then she turns into this giant flame ball thing with flaming hair and looks completely different, has a new outfit and everything, I was like, holy shit moment. I instantly had to like look her up. I was like, I was enthralled by this whole scenario. It completely caught me off guard, but I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, I don't know too much about Nikki as well. I do know that she's in the Guardians comic books, but I didn't read her up, so I don't know who her father is, or I'm guessing she is part Kree since she was found and like the Kree Council was rounding up people who weren't pure Krees, but I don't know who she is on the other side or what race she is on the other side.
I pulled up her character bio. She is from Earth 691, timeline fictional Marvel Universe. She is genetically engineered to live on the planet Mercury. As such, she has superhuman ability to withstand heat and ultraviolet radiation and can see clearly in very bright light. She is bald, although she expels body heat through her head in a low temperature flame resembling hair. She is the sixth member of the Guardians of the Galaxy and is noted for her acrobatic and sharpshooting skills. So she is a member of the Guardians in the comic book.
So I just feel like she just got the ultimate buff. Like, she's just powered up now. Like, if we're going into a boss fight, which we do, I'm fully confident Nikki's got us and got our backs. And speaking of boss fight, we actually managed to piss off Raker because we freed Nikki from this promise. So it's a boss fight. It's going down. Raker versus the Guardians.
Finally,
Nick, were you happy with this boss fight?
Yeah, because it was a god dang boss fight. Finally, we get to do that. But Nikki, I wish we got to use Nikki, like you said, but she's weak now and she's on the floor and we have to like save her basically.
Yes.
Which is disappointing because I wanted to use some like giant flame ball stuff.
Yeah, like she fully powered up. I was like, yeah, okay, let's go. This girl just passes out and then Groot has to wrap her in a cocoon. And I'm like, no, Nikki, come back, come back. But yes, it's about boss fight. And even though we're one person down, that doesn't mean we can't take Raker out. So for the first phase of this battle, you're not really attacking Raker at all, but instead you're fighting four unifiers supporting him. So you have to focus your attacks on one of the unifiers at a time and use the spots around the area for rockets, mines. Now, for this, it's very straightforward. We've done this before. We've been there, done that, and we will beat it. For the final phase, Raker actually jumps in front of the beam of life energy that's in the background, and it buffs him, so he gets a power up, and then he goes into fight. So if you prevented Gamora from chasing after Raker in Chapter 8, the Matriarch, you may have a tougher time in this battle because Raker will be fully powered because he has armed. Two arms.
Fully armed.
Fully armed.
Hey, come on. That was right fully there armed. For you. Oh,
I missed it.
It's all right.
Raker's strength of his attacks will be more powerful, right? So if you chose for Gamora to not go after him, he's going to be a little bit more powerful here. And he's going to use special moves like a shockwave that freezes any guardians next to him and an aura that blurs the action on the screen. This aura, oh my gosh, this aura, okay, prevents you from using your guardian's abilities. And it is super annoying. Very, very annoying.
Super annoying. I also think when he causes darkness and like the haze, that is the part that really annoys me. I couldn't really get a grasp of what I was doing. I got saved because I don't think I died in this fight once. I might have died one time. I'm not really sure. But my strategy with all of this was once my health was really low and I knew that Raker had his shield up and I know I couldn't attack him. Mm-hmm. So all I did was try to dodge, but I used Groot heals you up. So I always saved Groot's ability in the nick of time when I had low health to heal me back up because it heals you to full shield as well.
It does, yeah. So
that was my strategy in terms of dealing with him because it is kind of a slow grind of a fight. So I never used Groot's ability and I always just saved his mega ability for that point in time. And that came in handy for me and that's how I was able to defeat him.
This is a painful boss fight. And, you know, if you...
But it's good.
It is. No, it's good. But I'm saying like we also allowed Gamora to go after Raker. So I don't even want to imagine him using these special moves at a... like more frequency or more frequent because of your choice would be super, super challenging. So if you had that option, let us know in the Discord because I'm curious how you got through that. But yeah, it's the darkness, the haze, the aura, very annoying. Raker kind of starts off with like he's shielded through the first part of this fight. Pretty much you have to use regular shots to damage the shield. Mm-hmm. And once he's close to the ground, you like you said, Groot... could grab him.
Spam.
Groot actually, can I say for this fight, Groot is MVP because yes, grabbing him to the ground and making sure that he doesn't move is very important as well as healing. Yep. And then you just use the combo of the other guardians attacks while Raker's kind of trapped in Groot's roots. And then once his shield's gone, you could finally damage Raker more. And then the shield regenerates throughout the fight. But then if you just follow that same kind of cycle, you got this in the bag. And that's pretty much it. Just rinse and repeat for this whole fight, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is everything that I've come to want out of a boss fight. The last two, Fin Fang Foom, and this boss fight, 100% satisfying. Just wish that there was more of it. And yeah, I like how you said Groot's roots. That was funny. That's all.
Groot's roots. Nice tongue twister, but it's actually pretty nice when you beat Raker as well.
It lied to you. To both of us. Look at it. Really look.
My child. You did it.
This kind of irritated me, okay? Because I know the game is trying to make me feel bad for Raker, because we find out that he was also being manipulated by Magus, and Nikki kind of goes out and says the promise is a lie, it tricked both of us, and Nikki opens Raker's eyes to what actually is happening. And actually, through the fight with Raker, you hear Nikki talking to Raker, saying, don't make them kill you, don't make the Guardians kill you. Listen, Raker, trying to reach out to him. And I hated this because I really want to hate Raker. And I feel bad. I feel bad. Nick, did you feel bad?
I don't feel that bad for him. I understand that he's done all of this for his son. And maybe he's now seeing after the promise is over that he sees that this isn't all real. But I don't know how manipulated. Like, he was so far gone in his promise that everyone deals with grief differently, but I feel like maybe he went a little overboard with all of this. I don't know. I don't feel
like sacrificing a bunch of lives for the one. But then also, if you think about it, Nikki is doing the same thing. Nikki was doing the same thing. Like, that's what I hate. I really started to think about it because I was thinking like you. Like, I can't feel bad for this guy because he is actually the mastermind pulling the church to suck the life energy out of all these people. But then Nikki was doing the same thing. So I actually felt bad for Raker to make me feel better.
Okay.
And yeah, it just made me feel, it made me cope with what was happening in the game at this point.
Yeah.
Now, Warlock eats Magus as Magus appears. That's pretty much what happens. Warlock eats Magus and it's back to normal and everything is good. The Soul Stone gets back onto Warlock's forehead as well. And in true Guardians form, it wasn't like a full boss fight. It was a boss fight, but like it wasn't a full boss fight. And that leads us to the final cutscene. That's it.
So, we actually won?
Fucking right we did.
You must save the entire galaxy more often.
Count me in! Next time, I promise I won't almost destroy it first.
No more promises from you.
We're in this moment, people. Let's make sure we bask in it.
Yes. Bask in it. Although I will say through this part, they pretty much are walking
and
out.
Fist pumping.
Yeah, and fist pumping. They are so offbeat. Some of the Guardians are really offbeat with their fist pumping. So that's all I wanted to point out of that. But you also go down as you walk further and further. You interact with the different characters that you've met through your journey. So you heard Nikki there. We also see Cosmo and his puppies, all so cute. We see Lady Hellbender, who has a crush on Adam Warlock, apparently. I'm sorry, Nick.
No, I'm sorry. I was really jealous at that point. It's kind of weird too, seeing when they're doing their fist bumping walking through, there's like maybe like 6 or 7 people there. Like,
yeah,
I was expecting like a full-on like crowd.
A welcome wagon, yeah. Like just like cheering for them. But no, it's classic Guardians though, because they always think like they should get more praise than they actually do from everyone else.
Wow.
So, yeah.
They just saved the galaxy. I think they should.
Still, I'm not saying they shouldn't, but the actuality is no one gives the Guardians the props they deserve. So that's why for me, this ending was hilarious. You also see the Universal Church of Truth, Mantis, and Cammy.
Oh yeah, Cammy too.
How did Cammy get off the Milano? Where did they land the Milano for Cammy to appear on this walkway? There's also funny banter with Warlock. Warlock is kind of, I've said this before, he reminds me of Thor because he's that godlike character that talks with like so much regal, and he's just like so above everybody when he talks. He has, you know, his nose is up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he says something funny, it just hits harder.
It does,
like it
right?
Because you laugh because it's unexpected. You see that and you interact, and then that's pretty much the end. The credits roll. What did you think of this ending?
I loved it. I still think like the devs were kind of lazy. I think that's the reason why we didn't see that many people celebrating the Guardians. They're probably just like, we don't want to add extra characters there. That's going to take too much time. Let's just put it out there.
Yeah, they're like, it kind of rushed.
Yeah.
I was so satisfied by the end here. And then the credits roll. I was like super happy with how everything ended.
I wasn't.
You weren't.
No, I was like, they just walk out of there and that's the ending. Hell to the no. So I wasn't. But then when you read the credits, something weird happens.
You okay there, Gold Bond?
It is irritating indigestion. Nothing of note.
Okay. Well, there's a bathroom in the back if you need it. Oh, you don't look so good.
Where's the first aid kit? I have basic field training.
We do not own a first aid kit.
What are you talking about? We have a first aid kit.
Engine tape doesn't count.
You probably just need some ginger ale.
Don't worry about little old me. I feel simply fabulous.
Come on!
I am eternal!
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
What is even... Whoa!
The Flark? Vegas.
Yeah. This is the one where Golden God Guy is consumed by the bad thing and tries to destroy the galaxy. And probably succeeds.
Why does it feel like Bug Girl's inside my head?
I'm inside all of your heads. This way, Magus can't overhear your super amazing plan.
Which is?
So apparently that wasn't the ending at all. The gotcha happened. But if you actually read the credits, there were names that started glitching out and showing Magus.
Oh,
did you catch that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So as the credits were rolling, there were certain names that would just glitch out and it'll pop up Magus. And then it'll roll, continue rolling, glitch out, Magus. So I was like, what the hell? But I thought it was just a cutscene that we were going to get. I didn't realize we were getting a whole boss fight along the way. So like what happens there, Warlock got some indigestion. He didn't have any Tums for that. And he actually spits out Magus or like...
He becomes Magus, right?
Yeah, but the indigestion, did he spit it out? Because I thought he was just going to hurl. And then maybe that was Magus, but no, he spits it out and then becomes it. And the game's troll is kind of over, which was just a really great way to say, gotcha, that wasn't it. And to make fun of the fact that, you know, games endings sometimes aren't that great. I thought that was a good commentary on the industry.
I like this is a slow clap for me because I thought like this was so Guardians. This was perfect. Mm-hmm. The ending seemed a little too perfect in terms of like just a regular comic book story. But the Guardians twist of it all, that Warlock has indigestion and then becomes Magus. And we think it's the end of the game, but then we are on this other planet and now we have to save everyone from Magus. And it just seems, it's just so perfect. This caught me so off guard, but I loved every second of it. And this is what makes me love this game so much because is they come up with ideas like this that you wouldn't expect. And that are hilarious. It reminds you of the dance battle from the first Guardians movie because it's just so unexpected.
At this point, I guess Magus is kind of overpowered, right? Because before we've seen Magus in that little Letty form and occasionally when he's with a Warlock as, you know, Warlock the Dark, the Shadow Magus.
The Shadow,
or the Shadow Warlock, I would guess, in that form. But we actually see him grow to like a giant Magus once he engulfs a Warlock, and that's the start of chapter 16. Mm-hmm. And it kind of looks like we're in a like on a planet or something, like on top of a planet, and then Magus is kind of looking out at us. But whatever it is, this isn't your typical boss battle.
Oh, who would have thought?
Yeah, because after you kind of go along trying to dodge Megas's attack and his little minions that come at you, we realize that the real mission here is to bother the crap out of Megas so that we could get close to him and take him down, which I think is classic Guardians. It's very comparable to a dance battle.
One, this is the only point in the game where I was happy that there wasn't a boss battle. I enjoyed that the idea of this was to just annoy Magus enough that he gets frustrated, which I thought was hilarious. So this is where it's only suitable that we don't have a boss fight, so I'll accept it. But it's just hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's typical Guardians. I love this whole concept that we have to annoy him in order to beat him. That's just hilarious.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't, for the final boss battle, it can't be you're just like fighting someone to take them down. It has to be that there's like a trick to it all.
Yeah.
So yeah, you have these little interactions. You still have to dodge some of Megas's attacks and his minions. But if you select the right things to say to him, you're pretty much going to annoy him that you're able to get close enough to get the Soul Stone to trap him. So pretty much if you don't successfully annoy Megas, then you'll be forced to play this part of the battle all over again. Mm-hmm. So we're going to help you out a little bit so you can get close enough to trap Megas into the Soul Stone. So you have to select Slow Clap for your first interaction with Megas, then select Badger Him for your second, and the third, you select Provoke the Magus. And it's funny that they call it Provoke the Magus, like the Magus. Why can't we just call it Magus?
Same thing too. Like, it's hilarious. He's like, he's so full of himself. Like, that's the only way to defeat him. And he's like, what do you mean you are not abiding by what I want? It's just like, it's not even like super disses. Like, they're not saying like you're a complete doo-doo head. They're just like, basically throwing insults at him.
They don't even use fracking.
Oh, I know, right?
It's very clean. It's very clean. And he gets so offended, which is hilarious. And if you manage to piss him off enough, well, this happens.
Sooner or later, everyone will fall before me. The entire galaxy will fall.
Guys, the stone's being weird.
Now is the time, Guardians.
Reel him in, Quill. Only way to get a clear shot.
Submit to me! I said submit!
Time to get it through your oversized skull! We don't give in to anyone! I mean, seriously, have you met us?
That's right! We're the Guardians of the Galaxy!
We have business cards!
And we'd rather die than submit to you!
You dare defy a god? Have you no notion of my...
Oh, shut up!
What did you say?
She said you're the worst!
Ugh, your mockery mocks my very...
Here, Quill! Ah!
The final countdown!
The stone's gonna fry you, Quill! Like it did the first time! Just run!
What an amazing and just makes sense track to have for the final battle. And I like the game that is letting you know that this is going to be the actual final battle because of that song. But can we just talk about Megas here and his lack of good combats?
You mockery of my mocking.
Like, what?
You had no idea.
He's the worst at comebacks. Like, come on, he could have said something better.
I think the whole point is like, because everyone's always afraid of him, and that they're just saying you're a poo-poo head, that he doesn't even know what to come back with because they just keep making fun of him. And so that's the whole point. Like, he's just like, yeah, and he can't come up with good sayings. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just not used to people.
Because he usually just says, like, I am ending this world or some crap like that. So.
And people are like, yes, please do. Yes, please do. But no, the Guardians talk back. So he needs to practice his comebacks for that. And we actually get the stone close enough to Megas to trap it in the stone. And Quill is the last one to use it as he shoves it into Magnus at the risk of his own life. Because, of course, humans can't wield the stone. But I find that Quill can wield it longer than the average human. Because if you see it burn through him, and yes, it's painful. You see his reaction. But he is able to hold on to it. Like, his immediate... He's not letting go right away. Like, it seems like it's not too painful. But I like this quick time action sequence between all the Guardians trying to trying to get the stone close enough to Megas, because especially with the music behind, it just seems like the cheesiest thing, but it's so good. And Rocket shooting the stone to like send it on another trajectory is like something out of an 80s action movie. I love it. I love it.
No one wants to touch it for a long period of time until Quill gets it and he holds it for way too long that he's probably dead. We're not too sure, but I love that kind of sequence where everyone's just like trying to just tap it and bounce it off to each other. It's just like a game of like keep up or something.
Hot potato.
There you go.
And that's pretty much the end of the fight with Megas. When we come back from this break, we're going to go into the last bit of the game.
Did we get paid?
Not yet, but...
Does this mean it's over? Like, over?
The Magus is contained for now. The most insatiable entity in the galaxy is once again a prisoner of the Soul Stone. All that is left is determining what to do with it.
Sell it.
Destroy it.
Those are both terrible ideas.
He says we should combine both ideas.
Stone is neither bomb nor bauble, and not yours to bear.
Whoa. He just tried to kill us and eat the galaxy.
You cannot contain this calamitous force. I created it. I am its keeper.
No one can keep that thing.
Mantis, the chances of the galaxy being consumed again if we keep the stone?
Very high.
And if we give it to Goldilocks?
Not as high.
The child was correct. That perhaps the pull of its power would one day split my lone soul asunder. But I am not alone.
Just to be sure, the chances of the bad galaxy thing happening if we sell the stone?
Astronomically high.
The best way to make sure the Magus doesn't get out again is to make sure together. The second you feel any indigestion.
I shall call upon your crew. Motley though you may be. I fear we've fallen friends.
So MVP of the year. Yeah. Groot jumps in and heals Quill. Yes, round of applause for our man Groot there. And can Groot just bring anyone back to life? So what about Carell? What happened with Carell?
That's what I'm saying. Like, Groot, this is one thing where it's like Groot could bring anybody back to life, but he doesn't turn into baby Groot at all. Like, how much life force does he have?
I don't know. Can we just start a unified church of Groot?
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's what we need to do instead.
It would be way better than the other church for sure. I think it'd be a lot nicer.
Yeah, they'll just say I'm Groot a lot. Now, did you feel this was a cop-out, though? Like, how Quill was kind of brought back to life by Groot after suffering the effects of the Soul Stone?
It was a kind of cop-out, but at the same time, like, it's everyone's alive. It's a happy-feeling ending. You know, Nikki's back. Everyone's good. And obviously, they want to make sequels, I'm sure. So they can't kill off Quill. So they needed to bring him back to life at some point. Maybe someone's sacrificing him, i.e. Adam Warlock. But then there goes Magus again, so you can't do that. So I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the happy feeling ending where, you know, he comes back to life like that.
I am as well. I don't think there has to be an ultimate sacrifice for someone to be saved.
Yeah.
Although, yes, it puts more on the line if you have the ultimate sacrifice. But we've already like had a touching couple of chapters with, you know, everything with Corel and Nikki. I feel like if there was a sacrifice like Groot, I just wouldn't be able to take it. And I'd probably be mad at the game. But all is good, like you said. And Nikki and Mantis actually joined the team. Warlick. That's something different.
Warlick is still pretty funny.
Warlock will keep the stone, which there is this conversation of whether or not that's a good idea. And I mean, he had the stone before.
Right.
What's the worst that could happen? Megas could come back to life and the Guardians kick butt again. I mean, that wouldn't be my first choice, but selling it as well, probably not a good idea, Rocket. Just saying.
They said something along the lines like the probability of something bad happening is extremely high. But it does seem like, I don't think Warlock is in control of Magus as we think. Like, he had bad indigestion. Magus took over. He let Magus escape all those years ago as well. Warlock, you got to get your shit together, man. Like, come on.
Yeah. Get your ish together. And that's pretty much it. Everyone is happy. And then what I like too is that there's the scene where you have Quill talking to himself.
Yeah.
In the mirror.
Yeah.
About like what's going to happen with Nikki. Like how, like you have to convince yourself that it's okay to have a kid as a guardian.
Yes. Which is hilarious. Especially like you have to take care of her, but also you can't be like, you know, how the Guardians are now. You have to set an example. And how are you going to set an example? And also how are you going to let her do some of these things? I just thought it was a great realistic conversation with yourself in the mirror that I think a lot of people have in everyday life when you're brushing your teeth sometimes.
Yeah, you just talk to yourself and let yourself talk back to yourself. Now, overall with this ending, are you happy with it? Are you satisfied with how it ended? And do you think, back to our question, does this live up to the hype of not just being a movie turned or a comic book turned into a video game, but a video game that lives in the Marvel universe, as big and as high expectations we have from Marvel properties?
I think so. I was very skeptical because of it being a part of Square Enix family, especially the Avengers game. But I think in overall, this ending really did live up to the hype because I left feeling really good about it. I left wanting a sequel. I left laughing at the fact that they ended the game and then trolled us and then kept the game going and they made it unconventional. I think that is what I really love about this ending. It's very unconventional. Yes, it leaves you happy. Yes, there's a happy ending, but you didn't expect what was going to happen along the way. And that's what I really love about this ending. So I think it lived up to the hype in terms of a Guardians game / movie type where it was something unexpected that happened. You roll with the punches, all ends well, but you feel satisfied that they didn't go the conventional route.
Yeah, and I think that's the same for the whole story of the Guardians. Like, the whole game is very much like you think you know what's happening and you think you know what you're going to expect it being a Guardians game. And we do get that. We get awesome dialogue. We get a lot of funny moments. But the main point of the story that the plot point that we thought was like true and it is what it is,
yep,
was different. There was that huge twist that didn't affect. It's weird because sometimes when games do that whole plot twist in the middle, it can really affect how we see the overall story going, if it ruins the story for us or if it makes it better.
Yeah.
And for me, like, although I don't think it necessarily made the story better.
Are you talking about Nikki?
Yeah, the Nikki thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it made the story better, but I think it was needed. My whole thing is while I was playing the game, I was like, I cannot see Peter as a father after this. Like, how would Peter be a father? And it still holds that question of like, now, even after the whole Nikki thing, like, you got that relief of, yeah, Peter's not the father, but he also is now put in this father figure where it's like, that whole conversation with him in the mirror, it's like, how is he going to have a kid and like care for a kid on the Milano while they're, you know, picking up these odd jobs and going into dangerous situations? It still has that mystery of it, but it just leaves more room for error that you won't feel too like you won't, your heart won't be super dedicated if he fails as a father,
yeah,
as it would if he fails as a father figure. If that makes sense.
It does. I mean, I would have loved to see if he actually was Nikki's dad. I would have been happy with that regardless. But at the end of the day, he still has to be a dad to her. So it doesn't really matter. He's got to be that father figure. He has to kind of lead by example, even though it's kind of hard with this group. So who the hell knows what happens in the future. But I'd be really excited to see in a future game getting to use Mantis and Nikki as well in this whole thing. It would be really cool.
Yes, let's. I want to see that. I want to see Nikki and Mantis actually be on an adventure through us. I'm so looking forward if they do a second game, especially because I think this was a redemption for Square Enix. But overall, I think it's a really good story. It's fun. You're going to have a good time. And that's what I think of this game. And I think it does live up to the hype of a Marvel property. It's a really good Marvel property.
Yeah, I think overall, it was above expectations for me. I kind of had low expectations for this game. And then seeing how long the gameplay was, I think like 20 hours or so, I was a little skeptical. And then not having side missions, all that. Again, I wasn't sure where this was going. But what you get is this incredible story. It is so heartfelt. It is so beautiful. It's real. It's realistic. It helps people deal with how they deal with grief and all that. There's huge, huge, huge themes in this that I did not expect whatsoever. So for me, like I loved it. I didn't care that it was very main story driven. And that's about it, because it surprised me in a way that I didn't expect. And it felt like a movie, but it had enough there game-wise to make you feel good about it. But man, I was surprised at how much I liked this game.
Same here. And I think keeping it short and sweet to the point in the style of Miles Morales, it in our experience here on Autosave, it works. It works. It worked for Miles and it works here. Any other final thoughts on this game?
I just want a sequel. That's all I can say.
Okay.
I think.
All right.
Maybe. Okay. Sorry. Boss battles. Can we please have more Flarkin battles in the next game? That's all.
Oh my gosh. He is Flarkin. You know, he's serious. Yeah. Boss battles. Definitely. For Nick's sake, I think he'd lose his mind if there's a sequel and there is not enough boss battles.
And my favorite level was the Fin Fang Foom level. That was the best. Oh,
that's a good, most that's fun. A good level. That's a good level. And that's pretty much it for us. For the Guardians of the Galaxy game, I know what you're thinking, but what's your final rating? Well, to find out, stay tuned to our Patreon episode. Become a Patreon supporter. That's patreon.com/autosavepod. If you can, we'll save our final ratings for everyone that is there, as well as maybe dive a little bit deeper into what we thought of the game. But this has been a fun ride, Nick. It's fun being a Guardian. It's fun to see that the Guardians actually guarded the galaxy, and now it's just kind of the next game for us, I guess. We will let you know the next game that we will cover in a bit, so stay tuned to all of our social medias. You can find Nick at Nick Andrade on Twitter.
Yep.
No 89 there. And myself at This Camco. Let us know how you found the game if you played through it, and what would you like to see in a Guardians 2 game. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back next time on Autosave.